This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. I've been reading segments from Carl Safina's wonderful book, Eye of the Albatross, Visions of Hope and Survival, published in 2002. There's a Laysan albatross female that was banded and given a satellite transmitter, and she's been revealing all kinds of secrets to the scientists who are watching her vast travels across the ocean. Far away from her chick on Tern Island, part of the Hawaiian island chain. Safina's also been writing about other birds and many other topics, venturing into many realms of the Pacific Ocean, the seamounts, the evolution of the atolls, the monk seals that live only in these islands, the people doing the research there, how they've been fighting invasive grasses that are changing the ecology of these islands, the beautiful, colorful fishes that live in the reefs. Today we will learn about a huge albatross that so far has been almost unmentioned, but has captured me, as you will understand very soon, the short-tailed albatross, numbering in the millions before the feather hunters discovered their isolated breeding areas in the islands off of Japan and brought them right to extinction's door. They were saved by one man's efforts, Hiroshi Hasegawa. Because they nest in these islands, it was the Japanese that harvested them by the millions, and it was the Japanese who have been saving them. It's quite a moving tale. The island of Torishima is featured today. It's south of Tokyo, a few hundred miles, and it's an active volcano. The total area of the island is about 1.9 square miles. And on Torishima, I have some information from Wiki. In 1886, a major company was established to conduct systematic feather harvesting on uninhabited Torishima until they withdrew from the island in 1922. They actually built a small-scale railroad to transport all the feathers that they were harvesting. An estimated 5 million birds were killed and led to the near extinction of the short-tailed albatross, a very large, beautiful albatross, as we will find out today. Since the 1930s, the Yamashina Institute for Ornithology has taken a very active role in researching and attempting to preserve the local seabird species, especially the short-tailed albatross, which had been reduced to an estimated 50 birds by 1933. On November 1, 1954, Torishima was proclaimed a protected bird sanctuary. This designation has increased to that of a protected national natural monument on May 10, 1965. It can only be visited by research scientists with special permission, and landing on the island is very difficult due to heavy seas and lack of suitable landing beaches or facilities. Tour boats which take people around the island to view the birds are popular, but these tours are not permitted to land on the island. Researchers normally travel to the island by chartered government helicopter. And that was from the Wiki site about Torishima. We'll bounce around a little bit, head to Alaska, and then to Japan in today's reading. Safina starts by discussing some of Amelia's travels and comparing Laysans to the black-footed albatross, which also nests in the Hawaiian Islands. The satellite tracks may also be providing a major clue about why Laysan albatrosses outnumber black-footeds by 10 to 1. They are using the ocean differently, and Laysans are using much more of it, foraging over a much larger portion of the Pacific. Most Laysans, like Amelia, are going generally north and west from their Hawaiian breeding grounds. They seem to know how to use the big frontal zones and the edges of oceanic currents and deep seamounts at the most extreme remove from any glimpse of distant land. This gives the Laysans a truly vast main foraging area, stretching across the temperate and subarctic North Pacific. The black-footeds are more specialized, going mainly northeast from Hawaii toward mainland North America. They often slide over the narrow North American continental shelf, prowling the Gulf of Alaska, coastal British Columbia, in the waters off Washington, Oregon, and California. There, the outlines of distant shores and forested mountains come into sight. For people on those shores gazing seaward, the view suggests the immensity of the ocean that stretches over so many horizons, but few people sense the presence of the unseen albatrosses that are usually not very far away. In fact, one transmittered black-footed albatross has gone right to the Golden Gate Bridge and is hanging around San Francisco. Dave Anderson is dumbfounded. He reports, "When I saw where that bird is, the connectedness between these birds from these isolated islands and what we do in urban North America really hit me for the first time. That was another real moment for me, seeing something never understood before, something no one had any idea of." And now we join Safina in Alaska. By early May, albatrosses with living chicks awaiting them in Hawaii are strung out on 2,000-mile commutes to feeding grounds as distant as coastal waters within sight of California, the Pacific Northwest, British Columbia, and southern Alaska. Some of Amelia's transmitter-bearing neighbors are actually in the Aleutians right now. So I'm in Seward, Alaska, in a May snowstorm, boarding Mark Lunston's fishing vessel, the Masonic, to see what some of those birds are doing. Watching a perched eagle hunched against the driving snow on this bone-chilling evening, I'm wondering how birds from sun-seared Hawaii can really be here in such a polar opposite corner of the planet. For tens of millions of years, albatrosses searching for food roamed seas devoid of boats. In the past few decades, albatrosses have grown accustomed to sharing their richest feeding grounds with fishing vessels, and sometimes benefiting, but not without serious risks. Mark Lunston also knows about serious risks. He earns his living for himself and his family in the seriously risky business of Alaskan sablefish and Pacific halibut fishing. Lunston is a surpassingly thoughtful man, and he spends a lot of his time thinking about ways to avoid three threats shadowing him and his way of life: the weather, accidents, and the well-being of the short-tailed albatross. The short-tailed is the third albatross inhabiting the North Pacific. Even for an albatross, it is a large bird. The name is a misnomer. Their tails are not particularly short. Consequently, this albatross is sometimes called the Steller's albatross, after George Wilhelm Steller, born in 1709, died in 1746, whose name is commemorated in the Steller's Jay, Steller's Sea Eagle, Steller's Eider, Steller's Sea Cow, and Steller's Sea Lion. Three of those six creatures are endangered and one is extinct, further evidence of our hard presence. Steller was a German naturalist with the Russian Imperial Academy of Sciences who participated in the epic voyage of the St. Peter and St. Paul, commanded by Vitus Bering, in 1741-42. During a dreadful return along the Aleutians, the St. Peter and its crew were pummeled by gale after gale in an icy sea. The battered, leaking ship wrecked at the Commander Islands, seemingly dooming the men. Bering died, leaving the scurvy, weakened survivors to endure the bleak prospect of so howling a place. They soon found an immense, slow-moving, previously unknown creature living in the shallows. Essentially a giant Alaskan manatee, it reached the astonishing size of 35 feet in length and 20 feet around. These animals plodded through the kelp beds, grazing the brown algae fronds like cows and snorting like horses, unafraid and unsuspecting. The hungry men fashioned hooks on ropes. With these, they attacked one of the placidly pasturing animals. The stricken creature resisted only feebly, possibly due to pain, but its usually slow companions rushed to it. Some tried to upset the boat with their backs, while others pressed down the rope and endeavored to break it, noted Steller. 30 men on shore hauled the giant animal onto the beach. Estimated weight, 8 tons. The sea cow was perfectly designed for grazing kelp, but it had one fatal flaw. The people who found it thought it delicious. To their amazement, the meat resembled beef. They likened the juvenile's flesh to fine veal, and its fat tasted like the oil of sweet almonds. This strange new animal seemed sent by Providence to nurture the sick, shipwrecked men back to health. So inoffensive were these giants that Steller said he could sometimes stroke their backs with my hand. He further wrote, "In the spring they mate like human beings. After many amorous preludes, the female, constantly followed by the male, swims leisurely to and fro until, impatient of further delay, she turns on her back and both give themselves over in mutual embrace." Led by Steller, the recovered men built another boat from their wreckage and completed the mission. The survivors excitedly told others of the wealth of furs to be had in the Bering Sea and Alaska, and of the immense and gentle sea cows whose meat was succulent and nutritious. For the next 2 decades, sealers and fur-hunting expeditions, over 100 men, wintered on Bering Island, and many other vessels heading from Russia to Alaska stopped to kill sea cows for meat. A Russian mining engineer named Jakovlev, sent to investigate copper deposits, saw that the killing couldn't last. His 1755 petition for sea cow protection went ignored. Steller had described the animal's internal organs and had weighed one's 36-pound heart, but the heartlessness of humans caused the sea cow's final extinction just 27 years after Europeans first saw it. By 1768, Steller's sea cow was gone. As was Steller. During his long, slow overland journey homeward, Steller became ill and died of a fever at age 37. His journal and collection of natural specimens reached St. Petersburg a year later. Among them were the large gulls that naturalists recognized as albatrosses of a kind previously unknown to science. But long before Steller, Native American peoples of the coastal waterlands had known these big birds well. People frequently encountered this most coastal of albatrosses near shorelines, islands, inlets, even around river mouths. Native Aleutian people speared the huge birds from kayaks while hunting the island passages, and in the far north of the Bering Sea, hunters caught them at the edge of the sea ice. Abundant bones left behind in ancient Aleut and Indian middens on the coast from Alaska all the way south to California indicate that this albatross was a frequent part of human diets. It was the most important bird in Aleutian people's diets. Aleuts still hunted these albatrosses until the late 1800s, until the feather trade swept the breeding islands. As University of Alaska professor Rick Steiner has so eloquently written, the short-tailed albatross is perhaps the most stunningly beautiful of all the albatrosses. While beauty is in the eye of the beholder, the short tail is an animal of superlatives. It is the largest seabird in the North Pacific Ocean, and it has been the most endangered seabird in the world. For years, it was considered extinct. The adult, as Steiner elegantly describes it, bears a resplendent montage of color, including a distinguishing golden head, brilliant pink bill with a turquoise tip, a black ring around the base of the bill, wings of brown, black, and white, and pink and gray feet. Its feathers, some 15,000 of them on each bird, blow in the wind like thick fur. Like the wanderer, their plumage whitens with age. Short-tailed albatrosses originally ranged all the way from Taiwan, around and across the North Pacific, past Japan and Korea and Russia, and from Alaska south along the west coast all the way to Baja California. In the early 19th century, whalers occasionally brought short-tailed albatrosses to Edo, now Tokyo, where their meat was often sold as offshore crane, Okino Tsuru. At that time, short-tails bred in legions on a dozen or so islands southeast of Japan's main islands and around Taiwan. In 1894, a visitor to the Pescadores wrote that the short-tailed albatrosses absolutely swarmed around his ship. And there's a lot of description here of how they were taken by humans so easily. The distinguished Japanese ornithologist Yoshimaro Yamashina estimated that from 1887 to 1902, the plume hunters killed about 5 million short-tailed albatross. Safina brings us into the more recent history. He says, on January 6, 1951, weather station director Soji Yamamoto had a day off and decided it was a good morning for a long exploratory walk, scanning the view of Torishimo's ash slopes. He was astonished by the sight of 10 large, ghostly white birds. He rushed back to the station to confirm their identity. They were short-tailed albatrosses returned from the dead. 13 were photographed in 1954. At the time they reappeared, perhaps 40 remained alive, including younger birds at sea. 40. If there were 5 million originally, about 1 out of 125,000 had survived. Of the lowest reasonable estimate of just 1 million original short-tailed albatrosses, 40 is less than 0.5 of 0.01%, a number statistically equivalent to zero. But biologically, the difference between 0 and 40 is the difference between oblivion and hope, past and future. When the first known eggs of the short-tail's literal rebirth, 7 of them were laid in 1954. They were apparently the first short-tailed albatross eggs laid in over 20 years. In 1958, Japan designated the short-tailed albatross a natural monument. The staff of the weather station acted as the albatross's benevolent stewards until 1965, when frequent earthquakes and the threat of further eruptions forced the station's abandonment. Dr. Hiroshi Hasegawa first visited Torishima in 1976. Instead of the sad scene he expected, he was so inspired by the vigor and vitality of the few dozen birds he found that in that moment he saw his life's work. One may imagine that, like an albatross coming to its breeding ground after wandering many years at sea, he felt he had come at last to the absolute right place. Hiroshi Hasegawa was raised in the Buddhist tradition. He recognizes Torishima as a place sacred as any shrine. What place could possibly be more sacred than one relied upon by an entire race of living beings? Because Hiroshi senses the island's sanctity, he perceives in it an opportunity. "It is my responsibility to save the species," Hiroshi has said. The fact is, it is the responsibility of all of us. But Hiroshi, far more than any person in Japan or anywhere, has recognized his calling and acted. So nearly non-existent had the short tail become that between 1940 and 1991, the average number of sightings throughout the entire ocean from Japan to California was 1 per year. Between 1975 and 1992, aerial and ship surveys of 15,000 square kilometers of ocean off Alaska, where native hunters in kayaks had routinely speared the birds, found only 1 short-tailed albatross. Hiroshi has aided and abetted the birds to great effect, engineering what has been called one of the most extraordinary resurrections in avian history, because the newly steepened slopes of the volcano were loose with granular ash that caused eggs to roll. Hiroshi replanted clumps of native grass and built dozens of terraces to offer level nest sites for the birds. He built dikes and channels to divert away from the nesting areas the heavy rain runoff and landslides that can wash away eggs and kill chicks. And he set up decoys and recordings of courtship calls in a part of the island where the ground and vegetation offered more secure nesting potential, but the birds had not yet recolonized. Before Hasegawa began his life's work in the mid-1970s, only about 75 adults nested. By the turn of this century, 400 adults, 200 pairs, were raising about 75 chicks each year. Including juveniles, the population, growing at 7% annually, had passed 1,500 birds. We salute you, Hiroshi. In 1987, exactly 100 years after the first feather hunters climbed ashore among the swarms of giant birds, Hiroshi climbed across the shoulders of the island's volcanic slopes to conduct a short ritual intended as part apology, part prayer, collecting some of the numerous albatross bones from the surrounding ground. He placed them gently on a large stone beside two memorial cairns, lit candles and incense, and knelt as an offering to the spirits of the millions of dead albatrosses. On the stone he poured seawater for their drink and set out dried squid and flying fish. In the Buddhist worldview, each action carries consequence, not just for the acted upon, but for the actor as well. If we do not offer reverence and respect to the world, we will receive accordingly. It is our job to make a new world, Hiroshi has said, and it is. For the short tale, bets for the future are almost entirely with Torishima. Around 1970, a few also returned to the Senkaku Islands near Taiwan, where a small handful now nest. The prevailing odds remain risky. Even with its miraculous resurrection from apparent extinction, the short-tailed albatross is hardly in the clear. Torishima is still an active, smoldering, venting volcano, and it may yet again blow. Or after witnessing a half-century of insults, it may look kindly upon Hiroshi and the albatrosses, cloaking its own shouldering slopes and keeping its peace a while. Hasegawa has written that he is optimistic that this impressive bird will once again be seen with regularity among the coastlines of its vast marine range, including the long and beautiful festoon of islands lying along the western edge of the Pacific Ocean. But full recovery will take 2 centuries. Hiroshi Hasegawa will not be with us all that time. And so here is my wish, that in the great karmic cycle, Hiroshi will return, reincarnated, to see the albatrosses multiply. And as their tribe increases, may the kindred spirits of Hiroshi Hasegawa likewise proliferate. May more like him come forward for the sake of us all, so that together we may indeed make the world new. I will end there. There's a lot of updates on the work that's being done to increase the breeding populations and the locations of where these birds are breeding. The beautiful short-tailed albatross. You can find information online. And please take advantage of the archived broadcasts that are at WDRT.org under Natural Wonders. And you can hear any of these programs about the albatrosses from Eye of the Albatross by Carl Safina. They all stand alone. You don't have to hear them in sequence. This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. Thank you for listening.